couple of minutes at the beginning to show what scientific workplace looks like now, because I've realized that many of you may not know what it does. Okay, so first of all, this is a word processor. It's visual. We don't say that it's WYSIWYG. It's what you see is almost what you get, or what you see is better than, is not quite as good as what you'll get. What you get is better than what you see.
Just a little bit closer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me increase the size here. And I can enter mathematics very easily. We have palettes, toolbars, so you can do a point and click interaction if you want, but it can also be done entirely with a keyboard. So this is pure keyboard input. It is not linear because there's no line of text anywhere. But what I'm entering is in some sense linear. I'll just enter the quadratic formula, x equals. Now there's a button on a toolbar for a fraction, but I don't have to do that. I can type Control F. If I didn't want to do that, I can type Control FRAC. I can use the tech name. So if you know the tech names, there's no problem. Minus B, there's no plus or minus on the keyboard, but Control PM will do it. Control R is a shortcut for the radical. B, Control Up, puts me in the superscript position. Space always gets me out of the object I'm in. So one space gets me out of the superscript. I'm still under the radical. Another space gets me out of the radical. Tab takes me to the next part of the template, 2A, and space gets me out. F of x equals e to the minus x squared. And scientific workplace, this is not particularly relevant to this conference, but for our users, this is important. Scientific workplace contains a computer algebra engine. So I can click on definitions, new definition. And now if I type F prime x and evaluate it, I get the derivative f double prime of x, evaluate, and I can plot this. I need to introduce some toolbars, so I'll click on toolbars, and I'll add the compute toolbar and math objects, symbol cache, math templates, symbol panels. Okay, that's all I really need. Now, if I click on the 2D plot button with the cursor in that last expression, I get a two-dimensional plot of the second derivative. Shrink it back down. And I can drag this expression onto the plot and drag this onto the plot. Okay, so that's the basic functionality. Now we have several options. If I just do file save, what I save is a tech file. It's a LaTeX file. I can export the document, and so I can export it as an RTF document. The mathematics will be math type 5 mathematics, or math type 3, which is equation editor mathematics. I can export it as an HTML document, or XHTML plus HTML. And I can also typeset it using PDF tech. So we have PDF output, HTML output, with the mathematics in graphics, or MathML, your choice, RTF output, and LaTeX output. So that's the quick tour of Scientific Workplace. Now let me go on to the talk. Okay. You should all be familiar with the concept of logical design, or the separation of form and content. It actually goes back to Brian Reed's thesis, if not long before that, where the principle was the author is responsible for the content. Somebody else, a professional designer, a publisher, or whatever, is responsible for the form. This makes a lot of sense, because the expertise of the author is in the content, the expertise of the publisher is in the presentation. Furthermore, anybody who has sat down with Microsoft Word for the first time probably wasted a couple of days trying to make it look just like they wanted. You can spend a tremendous amount of time fussing and worrying about presentation when that really isn't that important, because any changes you make will be deleted by the publisher. And applying a format algorithmically is much more efficient than to apply styles to each individual element in the document. And if you do it manually, it's not going to be as consistent. And when a document is repurposed, if it's originally written for publication on paper, you might want to put it on the web. It's easy to reformat it automatically for different locations. This is a slide showing my impression of how history has gone. Tech came out, and several years later, tech is actually a programming language, and it's not very structured. And so it's up here in the upper left corner. And Lamport added a lot of structure to it, but it's optional structure. You can still put in raw tech if you like. So the structuredness is not enforced in any way. So it's close to this structured line, but not quite there. And it's declarative. Rather than say how you want a section header to appear, you just say it's a section header. And again, I didn't put it down at the bottom here, because it's not completely declarative. Programming macros can creep in and do tend to creep in. Similar story with PostScript. PostScript is a very flexible language. PDF decided for a number of reasons to take out the programming capability and make it purely declarative. On the other hand, it's not particularly structured. You don't necessarily know what was originally a section heading or a footnote, although this arrow indicates that they are adding structure to the PDF format. So I see that the general drift is from unstructured to structured and from programming to declarative. Okay, so the separation of form and content is a good idea. It has a lot of merit. Everybody who thinks about it hard agrees. But then there are the customers. And customers have been conditioned by programs like Microsoft Word. They want this font for this character in this place only. And they complain if they can't do that. Another reason authors want control over the format of their documents is that they're not intending to send it to a publisher. And so then they are, in effect, the publisher. They're self-publishing on the web. And so they want to control the format. And that's a valid reason. And then a lot of documents are written that are never printed. Class handouts, class notes, assignments, exams, other non-published documents. And some of these reasons are really quite legitimate. The first one is not particularly, but the others are. And so we have, over the years, changed our approach to how rigidly we stick to this form versus style, content versus style dichotomy. In the beginning, customers would say, I want to do this. I want to change this behavior of this particular style. And we'd say, no, you don't want to do that. Then we say, no, you really shouldn't do that. And you really, really shouldn't do that. And then finally we say, well, Package X can do that for you. Or you can rewrite the style file, which is totally out of the question, because our customers are our customers because they have atrophied little fingers and they can't hit the backslash anyways. And so certainly they don't understand style files. So this was not very satisfactory. At the current time, we tell them to use packages, and Scientific Workplace now has four manuals that come with it. And one of them basically is the discussion of the various packages that are available and how to use them in Scientific Word and Workplace. We have an escape mechanism also that allows you to put arbitrary snippets of text in your document. It appears on the screen as just a gray box, perhaps with a name in it. And if you click on that, you get a dialog that allows you to type some text. And that is often used in conjunction with the packages. Frequently our tech support will tell them exactly what code to add in preamble for some effect. Generally that's also in connection with a package. And it's still not very satisfactory because it's error prone. People buy our products so they don't want to worry about the tech. So for most users, there's no problem at all. We have what we call shell documents, which specify the LaTeX style that's going to be used and have things set up, and the initial content of the document is basically documentation on how to use that shell document. We have shell documents for about 150 journals, which sounds like a lot, but there are thousands of journals out there. But for most people, as you just heard, they get good output without any fuss, and they don't care about changing the format. And for them, there's no problem at all. However, some people still want to have control over that LaTeX that's produced. Currently, the architecture of the product is we have a WYSIWYG front end. The internal content, the internal form of the document is very close to LaTeX. It's not LaTeX. We do no macro processing. Basically what we do is we recognize all the LaTeX macros as objects, and so if we see a backslash section, we will create a section header. The code to create the section header is written in C++, and so the number of objects that we recognize is limited by C++ code. In other words, it's not very extensible. So we'd like to get around that limitation. And we'd also like to make it possible for experts, people like you, publishers, and so on, to modify something using a method that's well documented so they can control what tech is produced from our internal document. So we have several decisions to make. One is an internal format that's rich and extensible, and a rendering engine that's rich enough for our purposes to render a LaTeX document and which is extensible. Also, we need to be able to input or read in a LaTeX document, convert it to the internal form in a way that's extensible and standard using standard well-documented tools, so that if you have a LaTeX document that uses a macro or a package that we've never heard of, you could, in theory and probably in practice, add a little bit of code there to say how that particular LaTeX tag is going to be interpreted internally. And then we have to go the other way. We have to take the internal LaTeX and write it out using a tool that's extensible and standard. And so this makes it easier for us and for end users in cases where they're experts to add new macros and to modify the LaTeX that's generated. In other words, it provides a platform for us to add new features over the next 10 years. Okay, so our decisions were, currently, as I said, our internal format is very much like LaTeX. We're going to change it to XML and MathML. The technologies are there, they work, and we've made the decision to build it on top of Mozilla. So the rendering engine is the same rendering engine as Firefox uses, and that's called Gecko. I guess a gecko is a small lizard and Mozilla is a big lizard. It's got a lot of advantages for us. First of all, it's open source, but it's got a friendly license. Commercial companies can modify it. If we make changes to existing files, we have to make those changes available to the public at large. If we add new files, we get to keep they're proprietary. So we've done both. We fixed one bug in the Mozilla MathML renderer. And XML is something that's easily converted to and from LaTeX, as you see. In our current products, I believe you have a 30-day trial copy. In our current products, we produce HTML with MathML with no problem. We apply some heuristics when we have decisions on, you know, is this apply function or is it multiplication? But generally, our choices are pretty good. They're good enough for us to do computation with the LaTeX. Some more advantages, there's a powerful scripting engine. This is something we get for free by building on top of Mozilla. It's a JavaScript engine. In fact, most of the Firefox user interface is built in JavaScript. There's also a technology, I believe Mozilla browsers are the only ones that contain it, but it allows attaching new display behavior and response to mouse clicks and so on to XML tags. So I can take a tag, have it display in a special way, and have it behave in a special way. And that provides extensibility inside the rendering. I said before that to render a tag, currently, we have to have C++ code that does it. That will go away. Technical point, there are lots of broadcasters and observers, which makes coordinating things quite easy. And infinite undo is built into all the document modifying functions. It's somewhat embarrassing. When I got control of the company in 1998, there was undo delete, and that was the only undo operation. So if you highlighted the whole document and typed A, you would then have A, and you're screwed. So I said, that has to change. And the programmer said, well, okay, now you can undo almost all document modifying operations once. So if you highlight the whole document and type AB, you can undo and you get A. So we need infinite undo, and we will have that. Okay, for the LaTeX to XML, importing LaTeX, we basically have re-implemented the tech macro processor. And so what happens is that it will read in some files, and when a macro is defined in one of those files, it will then be expanded when it's used. But those files that we read in do not include the LaTeX files. So any macro defined in LaTeX does not get expanded. But anything that's defined in, say, your document in terms of LaTeX macros will get expanded. So this is a technique that reduces the document to standard constructs. That is actually in Scientific Word, Workplace, and Notebook 5.5. Okay, but in this case, rather than read in the LaTeX macro definitions, we create our alternative LaTeX. And those macros are modified to generate XML. And so here's a little bit of that file. This is how we define / abstract. Well, actually, we're defining out, at, begin, at, abstract. But this is just putting a carriage return, a line feed, in the document, so it's readable. MSI open tag basically pushes that abstract, so we know what tags were inside, because we have to do some unwinding. And then this text here is actually what gets put in the XML document, and that's what gets parsed. And then at the end of the abstract environment, we put in / abstract. So that's very easy. I should say, with LaTeX, you can have bold and then another font change. So bold covers this region, and emphasize covers this region. And this situation's not allowed in XML because it has to be a tree. This has to be entirely within this, or this one has to be entirely within this. So in this case, we have to break one of these tags into two pieces, from here to here and then down here. So that's what's going on in this MSI open tag and closed tag. Okay, on the export side, we're modifying an XML tree, and so we just use XSLT. If you haven't heard of that, it stands for XML Style Language Transformations, not translations. And it's a powerful tool. You can go to Borders and buy 5 or 6 books on it. And here's the companion to the other bit of text I showed you. This says when we hit an abstract tag, we emit the tech slash begin abstract. And this XSL apply template says process everything else until you hit this end abstract, or until you hit the end of the tag abstract, and then emit backslash end abstract. And so if I wanted to change the tech that's generated here, I can put stuff in here. Okay, I'll spend some time going through an example of adding a new tag to Scientific Workplace using this XBL technology that Mozilla provides. Somewhere in a CSS file, a style file, there are some lines that say this, LaTeX, that says whenever this tag is encountered, process this. Well, Moz binding is an extension that Mozilla has written, and it says go to this file and this marker to find out what to do. Okay, and so in that file, at that marker, there's a tag that looks like this. XBL content says for this tag, we're going to generate some content that wasn't there already. Let's skip this line. Okay, the content that's generated is a LaTeX 2 tag, L, a LaTeX A tag, A, whoops, and then end of the LaTeX A tag. And so there's tags for A, T, E, and not for L and X. And then in another CSS file, there's some formatting information for each of those letters, A, T, and E. And the one for the A is make it smaller, position it relative to where it would be otherwise, move it up 1/15 of an M, and move it to the left 20 units. And so it looks like this top one here in our program. Now, if you viewed that same document with Internet Explorer would see that Moz binding in the CSS file, and it would say, huh, I don't know what to do. And it would just ignore it. In that case, it would end up just writing out the content, the capital L, little a, which is what you do when you can't do the real thing. And so it works in all cases. Okay, now I'd like to give some demos. I claim that XML and Zool is a very powerful, there are a lot of things that you can put in a document. And as proof, I will show you that the user interface for Firefox is in fact an XML document. So instead of HTTP, I'm going to type Chrome, browser, content, browser.xul. While I'm at it, I'll copy it. There is Firefox displayed in Firefox. And this is fully functional. Bookmarks, still there. Do it again. Okay, so potentially, and this is important not for producing LaTeX documents, but for making a platform for computer-aided instruction. Open universities, take note. You can put in menus, buttons, lots of stuff. So let me then start mistyped. I apologize for running a debugging version, but that's what I have, this most recent. We won't need that. Okay, this is a future version of Scientific Workplace. I should warn you, this is pre-alpha. I know it will crash when I exit. It may crash before then. Okay, but
when it crashes, you'll exit.
That's right. And when it crashes on exit, everything is saved, so that's not too much of a problem. Okay, so basically it works as before. Let me enter some mathematics. X squared minus y squared. And then I can click on the 3D plot button. This takes a little bit of time because it's the first time I've called for a computation, and so the computation engine gets plugged in. And then SciFace has provided a nice little plug-in so we can play around with the graphics online. And undo works. So let me type some text. First section, shrink it a bit. Okay, then I will apply a tag here, section. And now I can type some stuff. Now, in Scientific Workplace and Word Notebook for at least 12 years, we've had a feature called auto substitute, which is if you type a certain sequence of characters, they have to be alphabetical characters in math mode, then you can assign you can make that a pattern and assign something that will be substituted for that. So I can, for example, type the quadratic formula, assign it the name QF. Every time I type QF in math mode, the quadratic formula appears. So we've improved that several ways in this one. First of all, it doesn't have to be in mathematics only, it now works in text. Second is that it's not limited to alphabetical characters, you can have punctuation marks in the patterns. And the third change is that not only can you have a substitution for it, but you can execute a macro with it. So I'm going to type dot L-O-R-E-M. The dots are just my convention. I figure something between two dots is not likely to appear in natural text. And so I've got some text there. Whoops. Go back and hit the period. Let's shrink it again. Now if I want to type a subsection, I can type the text, go up here, click on the subsection, and apply that tag, but I can also do Control Tab. Control Tab again will give me a subsection. Then if I do Control Enter, it will give me the next tag at that level, or the next section at that level. If I decide there aren't any more, I just do Control Enter again and I go up one step. So sub two, and then control enter. I won't continue with that. I'm going to make this one italics. And now I'm going to show some interfaces to some packages. One is an interface to the geometry package. So I can have two column text, one column text. I can click there. If I click in the top half, I change the width, and I can change that with the arrow keys. If I want to center it horizontally, I can do that, whatever. Then I go in to change the fonts. And there's a checkbox up here that you have to click to enable this, because if I start choosing open type fonts, I'm committed to ZTEC. And maybe a publisher won't want that. So Here I'll choose Minion Pro with old style numbers, Swash, Myriad. Is the Adobe guy still here today? Yeah, I'm curious about what the status, Myriad Pro, Myriad and Minion Pro come with Adobe Acrobat 7 Reader. Does that give us the right to use them in documents? Okay, good. And now I can also enter other fonts. I have to give them names. I'm going to do one called RTL. And I'll choose Narcissin, whatever that is, for that. And now here I want to insert an RTL paragraph, and the cursor goes off to the other side because it's right to left. And now I will choose a Hebrew keyboard, and I know none at all, so I do know I shouldn't shift, but now is, whoops. I didn't want that in. Okay. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid, etc. And now I click on PDF preview. Hope, pray. Okay, and it pops up in our preview pane, normal preview. Okay, the one thing I forgot to do was I wanted to put in some numbers to show that you got the old style numbers. But there's the Hebrew and the Swash italics. And I can quickly add some numbers. Okay, so 1 minute left, which doesn't leave much time for questions, but I will take questions if you have them.
Would you mind showing the XML tags?
The XML for this document?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just killed it, but I can
oh,
find
it. Okay.
I can find it. That's the old stuff. Here's another file.
Okay.
But it's basically LaTeX that looks, it's XML that looks like LaTeX. We saw no great reason for changing the tag set. So there's a title, there's a document class, there are a bunch of use package statements, new theorem statements, a make title, author. The mathematics is MathML, and I agree with everybody else who said that you don't want to write this yourself. I will say that Roger Sidgy told me a couple of years ago that our MathML export was the best that he'd seen, because we take something like 60 passes over to get the precedence right. The guy who wrote that code was obsessive. So that's what it looks like. It's very easily converted to LaTeX. Other questions? Yeah.
To what extent can you resolve author-defined macros on top of the document in LaTeX if you read it?
Yeah. We have this tool that's basically a tech macro preprocessor. So it reads in some files, takes the definitions from those files, and then applies them to the other files. Now, by controlling what files it reads, you can make it expand macros or not expand macros. So if you if your user-defined macros are defined in your document,
yeah,
we will read that, we will see the definition, and then when we see the use, we'll expand it. For a package, if you have all of your nifty macros in your own package file, then you have to do some command line stuff so that we read that package file, but we don't read, for example, John.
I think it's doable with the current version?
Yes, with the current version. But I don't know of any case where anybody actually asked our support how to do that command line stuff. So people aren't doing it.
I'll be calling you.
Okay. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. No, in text, space bar types of space. I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of that.
If you start a list in text mode, how do you end the list? In GUI,
right? Yeah, in GUI, you're typing a list.
Yeah.
And you get to the end of one item, you get the end key, and it does the next item. And you've got to the last item, how do you get there, not to the next item, but out of list mode into the surrounding?
That code actually isn't written yet, but it's going to be the same as getting out of a subsection. You type control return. And you will be starting the next subsection. If you hit control return before typing any characters, then you pop out one, and you pop out one at a time.
Thank you.
Okay.